Okay, what do you think about this book? It's good, isn't it? I mean, it is packed full. Packed full. And if you haven't been keeping up with the reading, I really, really want to encourage you to catch up. It will be so worth your time. And maybe you even need to download the book and listen to it while you're in the car or while you're cleaning the house or while you're rocking the baby. Wherever you can find some time, please try to squeeze it in. Now, she covered a lot of ground in these three chapters this week. And I'm never going to be able to touch it all. We're going to even just take one subject this morning, and I'm not even going to be able to touch all of that one subject. But I want to begin by just going back to that child-centered approach that we talked about the first week we were together. And we're not going to spend much time here this morning because I feel like in the first chapter of this section, she covered it pretty well. But what I do want to do is just point out a couple of things. And first, in our parenting culture today, one of the biggest issues we have is we have an incorrect view of our children and of our job as parents. Because we want to think of our kids as these little seeds, right? They have all this potential that's wrapped up inside this little seed, and all we need to do is stand by and watch it grow, and when it wilts, we water it, and when it looks like it needs some sun, we move it over by the window, and we just maybe talk to it and encourage it, and we think that if we can give this enough support, if we can give it enough encouragement, then it's magically going to just grow into this beautiful flower. And we've bought into this belief as parents that we're just supposed to take this reactive and many times even passive approach to parenting. And that if we do this right and we provide all the right opportunities and we provide all the right encouragement, then that child will develop into what already is inside of him. Right? Does that make sense? But that's not what our kids are. Instead of our kids being these little seeds, our kids are lumps of dough. And I don't know if you've ever baked. I mean, I didn't tell my kids that this morning, but don't tell them I said that. If you've ever baked anything from scratch, or maybe you've been around when your mom or your grandmother or a friend baked something from scratch, you know that you mix up the dough and you stir in the yeast and then you set it somewhere to rise. And that dough has a lot of potential, and so as it rises, it gets bigger and it starts filling the bowl. And if we ever just stand by and let it go on its own, what happens? It overflows the bowl, right? And it makes a huge mess all over your counter. And it sure doesn't turn into anything useful. It just inflates itself until it overflows. And so if you want to turn it into something beautiful that you can actually enjoy, that you can give as a gift maybe, that you can eat, it's pretty to look at, then you have to take that bowl and you have to dump it out on the counter and you have to pound it down and you have to knead it, okay? Easy. But you have to work it and you have to knead it and you have to continue shaping it into what you're envisioning the end product will be. And it's hard work, and it's not always fun, and it can be messy, and your arms get tired, and it takes a lot of energy, and there's moments that you go, what was I thinking? I should have just gone with Sister Schubert's. I mean, this is too much work. But remember last year how we talked about pay me now or pay me later? Remember that? There's always a price. Nothing comes for free. And though it's really, really tempting sometimes in the moment to take the easy road, paying later always costs more. And so we can't be passive in our parenting. And so the answer to that problem of child-centered parenting is not just shifting back towards parent-centered approach. Right? Sometimes we think, well, we were here, we went here, and that didn't work, so let's just go back over here. Well, we had problems here, too. going back to a parent or adult-centered approach is not the answer. The answer is a God-centered approach. And so I just want to make sure that you're hearing that clearly and that we're thinking about that consciously and that we're crystal clear that we're not going back here. We're going somewhere different in our parenting. And one of the areas where we absolutely cannot afford to be passive is in the area of technology. This is kind of the wild, wild west of parenting, right? I mean, we don't really have an example to follow as to how to parent this technology that is so saturated in this generation. But it's hugely important for us to discuss and for us to get a handle on, both in our own lives and in the lives of our kids. So that is where we're going to spend our time this morning. Let me pray for us really quick before we start into that. God, we just come to you this morning and we say, this is a massive subject. And there's no way we could talk about it all this morning. There's no way we could cover all the issues that it brings up, all the problems that it can bring into our lives. God, but would you help us? Would you take the gift that you've given us that's meant for good, and would you help us keep it that way, God? Don't let it be turned against us in our own lives and in the lives of our family. Give us hearts to hear this morning what you have to say, and help us to go forth from here and follow those instructions. In Jesus' name. How do you feel when you leave home and you realize you forgot your phone? Or you get a ding or a buzz that tells you you have a new text message or a notification? Or what about when you hear that buzz but you're in a situation where you can't pull your phone out? And you're wondering, gosh, who is that? Does somebody need something? Is something wrong? What's going on? What do you do when you stop at a stoplight or you stand in line at the grocery store or you sit in the carpool line waiting for your kids to come out of school? Anybody updated their iPhone to the new operating system? How about that do not disturb feature that automatically comes on while you're driving? How does that make you feel? It's tricky, isn't it? You know it's good for you, but you're also like, dang it. No, I'm not driving. I'm not supposed to lie, but I'm not driving. Yeah. What about when your battery gets down to the single digits? I mean, are you feeling that anxiety a little bit? It's crazy. I mean, back there fanning themselves. They're sweating back there. Technology, I've got some numbers for you, and they're pretty staggering. Out of 7 billion people on the earth, about 6 billion own a cell phone. But only 4.5 billion have access to a working toilet. We're spending an average of 4.7 hours a day, and even more for our teenagers, almost one-third of our waking hours looking at our phones. On average, we check our phones 85 times a day. Studies show that we're not even aware of how much time we spend on our phones and that we're actually spending twice as much time on our phones as we think we are. We're killing our necks, we're killing our backs, we're driving ourselves nearsighted, we're ruining our ability to focus on a task or a conversation, and we're actually altering the chemicals in our brain that control our sleep patterns. Our activity on our devices is actually creating an addiction that in the brain chemically mirrors a nicotine or a heroin addiction. So if technology's doing all these things to us, what in the world are we using it for? What are we looking to technology for? What are we seeking to find through it? Well, I came up with a few things that are good things, actually, that I think we're looking for from technology, but I'm not sure it's working out the way that we thought it would. The first is we're looking for ease. We're looking to be able to accomplish things with less work. And that's a good thing, right? The problem is our brains and our children's brains are actually forgetting how to learn and think and remember things. Because we don't have to anymore. How many of you, when you were growing up, and I hope I'm not dating myself on some of these statements, but how many of you could rattled off all your best friends' phone numbers? You knew them by heart, right? You knew everybody's phone number. I would venture to say that you could not today tell me 2 phone numbers of your closest friends. You think? Dr. Sally Andrews, a psychologist at Nottingham Trent University, says this. She says, research has shown technology use can impair attention, productivity, and memory. It can dampen creative thinking, increase stress levels, reduce sleep quality, and lead to, quote, cognitive errors, like forgetting meetings and walking into people. Yeah, you've done it. I know you have. From our data, she says, it's difficult to say what effects this will have on cognition, but recent research suggests that the constant availability of the smartphone limits the analytical and intuitiveness of people's thinking and reasoning because everything is Googleable. That's the word she used, Googleable. We don't have to know anything anymore because what do? We just say, hey, Siri, or okay, Google. And we can look up whatever we want to know. We have calculators in our pockets, and in this smart generation, we're literally becoming dumber. And then the immediate overtakes the important as a flood of information that many times really isn't even important to us. It fills our minds, and the next notification pops up, and Instagram refreshes, and emails are checking, and it's all happening so fast. And it prevents us from allocating time to the things that are actually useful and meaningful to us. Then in an effort to make work easier, it's actually become more of a burden because instead of working 8 to 5 and leaving the office, now we take the office in our pocket with us. And we're constantly accessible, and many times we're expected to respond to emails and texts, no matter what hour of the day it is. And our job becomes a round-the-clock responsibility. The second thing I think we're looking for is we're seeking connection with others. You know, we've been sold this lie that we can do it through this little device. And our devices appear to provide connection, but so many times that's a deception. Instead of being more connected, loneliness is at an all-time high. Instead of improving our relationships, we're experiencing more jealousy and fear of missing out because we see every party that's happening. We see every impromptu picture that gets taken or get-together that our friends have that we didn't know about. And we're actually losing our social skills. Our kids don't know how to make a phone call. If they want to order pizza, they do it online. If they want to talk to a friend, they send them a text. If they want to find out information, they Google it. And we're so caught up in documenting things, videoing something, that we miss out on the actual experience of it. We run the danger of being overconnected, especially for our teens. I've talked to so many moms who said, yeah, my son is dating this girl, and as soon as he wakes up, he texts her. She texts him. They're texting all day long. She knows where he is before I know where he is. And they're texting until they go to bed at night. And it brings this level of intimacy that happens so fast. And it's inappropriate for our teens. And in seeking that connection with others, we also seek the approval and acceptance of those around us through technology. We like it when we get a like on Facebook or on Instagram. But the problem is the approval that we receive is based on a partial view of who we are. It's based on this contrived, even filtered, right, persona that doesn't reflect our lives as a whole. So even if we did know someone through our social media, we don't really know them. We know a portion of them. I mean, have you ever gone to your Facebook page or your Instagram account and just scrolled back and tried to think objectively, if somebody looked at my feed, what kind of picture would they form about me? What would they think I'm like? What would they think I'm interested in? It's interesting to do that. And think about how accurate is that picture. And finally, the problem with trying to connect through our technology is that there are no boundaries anymore. Everything gets documented. Nothing is private. And people say and post things online that they would never say in person. So we think we're being more connected, but we're not. The third thing that we look to technology for is entertainment. We use it to avoid boredom. It fills our moments in those little dead spaces in our day. We consume more than we contribute. We use it as a babysitter for our younger ones, even our older ones. We're addicted to distraction. Our brains are actually bored when there's only one thing that's going on. Have you noticed that with your kids? They've got to have more than one thing going because their brains are looking for that fast stimulation. And we're literally unable to focus on one thing. We lose the ability to be in the present and enjoy the present. I tell my kids that sometimes when I'm dropping them off to go somewhere, be where you are. Be there. We turn to our phones in social situations when we might be insecure, right? You walk into a room, maybe you don't know anybody there, or you haven't found the person that you're supposed to meet. What do? Pull out our phone. Kind of get, I just got to respond to this text or email, right? I mean, come on, admit it. We've all done it. So what are we going to do? Well, first, we've got to check our own selves. Many times, kids will do in excess what their parents do in moderation. So we've got to be good examples for our kids to follow. We need to evaluate things. Do we know how much time we're spending on our phones? It's easy for us to see that time that our kids are spending. It's harder for us to see it in ourselves. And Matthew 6:21 tells us, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Our time shows what we treasure. So how do we do that? There's several ways. We talked this morning in leaders meeting about you can go to your battery settings and you can see where you're spending your time on your phone. There are devices out there like Circle, Torch, Google Wi-Fi. You can spend $100 to $150 one time and it will track the time that you're spending at home. You can set limits. You can set bedtimes. You can set off times. And then those things will happen automatically without you having to say to yourself or your kids, put your phone down. Those are great options for helping us be aware of how we're interacting with technology. But we've got to have some guardrails. Andy Stanley at North Point Church has a series that he did this summer called Guardrails. And I would really encourage you to check it out. Because he talks about how we need guardrails in certain areas of our lives because guardrails help keep us in the area that was meant for safe driving. And he goes on to say this. I love this. He says, guardrails keep us from handing over control of your life to someone or something else. They keep us from handing over control to something else. And many of us have handed over control of our lives to this little device that fits in our pocket or our purse. So what does it look like? What kind of guardrails do we need to establish? Well, the real answer is it depends. Because setting parameters around technology for yourself and your family, it takes a lot of discernment and it takes a lot of wisdom because it's going to look different for each of us. But God tells us in James 1:5, he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. And so as we begin to think about this process, you got to go to the Lord in prayer and you got to ask him, God, what does this look like in my family? What does this look like in my life? And there's a great book that I would recommend. It's called The TechWise Family by a guy named Andy Crouch. And I'm going to kind of steal from him today because I think he gives us some really good guardrails. Some general principles that we can then take and make specific guidelines for ourselves and our families. You know, it used to be that in order to access technology, you had to go sit down at the computer. And technology had a place. And to access it, we had to go to that place. But now, technology completely permeates our lives. It's completely portable. It's everywhere we look. And it's not going anywhere. It's only going to become more prevalent. And so what Andy Crouch says in his book is, technology is a great thing. We just have to learn to keep it in its proper place. And so he has a few guidelines for us, ways that we can tell when technology is in its proper place and when it's out of its proper place. So I'm going to walk you through those this morning. He says, we know that technology is in its proper place when it helps us bond with the real people in our lives. And it's out of place when it causes us to bond with people at a distance. How many celebrities do we follow on Instagram? How about your teenagers? We got some cleaning up we need to do at the Carter household of Instagram feeds. Because if our technology is causing us to bond with some person that we're never ever going to meet, then it's out of place. And we've got to teach our kids that we only have a certain amount of time and energy that we can spend investing in other people and in the relationships in our lives. And our priority needs to be the people that God has placed around us that we can actually interact with face to face. So maybe you need to sit down and look at your social media feeds. Look at your kids. Walk through with them. Explain to them the why. Don't just say, you need to unfollow all these people. Help them understand the heart behind that. The second thing he says, technology is in its proper place when it starts conversation with others. And it's out of place when it prevents us from engaging the people around us. You know, we used to talk and laugh and maybe play I Spy or the license plate game or something in the car, right? But now what happens when we get in the car? We turn on the movie, kids are on their phones, everybody's staring at their own screen. And you used to have to talk to people to get information or to spread information. Now you just post it online and automatically all these people see it. Or you send it by text or you send it by email. And in so many ways that's helpful and time-saving, but what it eliminates is the relational component in those conversations. Usually when we have a conversation, it's not only that information exchange. It leads to some other topic. And we build relationship through those conversations. 30 says, technology is in its proper place when it helps us care for the mind and body that we've been given. And it's out of place when we use it as an escape. Yowza. Technology is in its proper place when it helps us care for our mind and body, and it's out of place when we use it as an escape. We've got to realize that the amount of time that we are mindlessly scrolling social media or playing the latest game, and recognize when really what we're seeking is an escape. And man, when you're a mom and you got all these kids running around, it's nice to find an escape, right? But we've got to teach ourselves that there are healthier ways to find escape, to find a break from the day, from the chaos. There are healthier ways to relieve stress. And our kids need for us to teach them that. They need for us to teach them how to deal with stress and worry and anxiety. But the problem is, we're over here like this, dealing with our own stress. We need to learn how to have breaks from our devices and deal with stress in a healthy way that engages us rather than allows us to escape. 4th, technology is in its proper place when it helps us acquire the skills necessary to be contributors to the world. And it's out of place when we only use it to passively consume. God didn't put us here to just soak up, whether that's information or relationships. He didn't put us here to just be consumers. And the internet has become the most valuable educational resource we have available, right? If you want to learn how to do something, what do? You YouTube it. I mean, you can learn anything on YouTube. Underwater basket weaving? YouTube. You want to learn to sew? YouTube. You want to learn how to cook? YouTube. You want to learn what a heart surgery looks like? YouTube. I mean, you can find anything on YouTube, and that's great. Until it just becomes about consuming more and more and more. God designed us to create, to be creative, to contribute to the world, to bring Him glory. And we don't do that when we're just consuming. 5th thing, technology is in its proper place when it helps us cultivate awe for God and the world He has created. And it's out of place when it keeps us from engaging with God and discovering all that He has created. It's easy for us to let technology be a substitute for experience, right? How many times do you scroll through Instagram and you see this picture of a sunset? Even sunset, hashtag no filter, right? I mean, yeah, it's pretty. but it's nothing like going outside and experiencing it. And we're missing out. We're missing out on what God has for us because we've traded true experience for a cheap substitute. And we can't allow that technology to fill every nook and cranny of our time so that it crowds out that time to spend with the Lord. Just acknowledge Him throughout our day. Finally, Crouch says, technology is in its proper place when we use it carefully and intentionally. And it's out of its place when we use it habitually and aimlessly. Now, I mentioned at the beginning that we check our phone on average 85 times a day. And the research shows us that over half of those times, that interaction just lasts a few seconds. Which means we're not going to our phones to actually do something. We're going to our phones out of habit. Did I miss something? Did somebody call? Did I not hear my phone? Is there a new notification? Is there something going on? And so we need to think about that. We need to think about those habits. James K.A. Smith, who wrote a book, You Are What You Love, The Spiritual Power of Habit, has this to say about how we handle technology in our lives. Micro practices have macro implications for our lives. And the rituals we adopt around the tiny computers in our pockets can either eat us alive or release us for relationship. Isn't that good? Don't you want to be released for relationship? Don't you want that for your kids? But here's the thing about technology. Technology will not stay in its proper place on its own. It takes a lot of work to keep it there. And your kids are not going to like limits. And you're not going to like limits because we're addicted. And when we're addicted, we can't help but have a compulsion towards that phone, towards that technology, towards that screen. But we've got to work to keep technology in its proper place. 2 weeks. That's what Andy Crouch says. For 2 weeks, your kids are going to complain loudly about the limits you set around them. For 2 weeks, you're going to go, no, I'm not driving, I promise. And you're going to turn that phone on. But we've got to discipline ourselves. We've got to be intentional, and we've got to change how we're interacting with technology. This is tough. It is a tough area to parent. Because this came about almost overnight, right? If you look at cultural shifts, 10th anniversary of the iPhone a couple weeks ago, right? So 10 years ago, which is not that long ago, the only way you could check your email on the go was if you had one of those Blackberries with like the 8,000 buttons that only a few people knew how to really work. You remember those? But we can't let the suddenness of this and the difficulty of parenting this area be an excuse for failing to guide our children. James 4:17 says, so whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him that is sin. But remember, James 5 tells us that even when we don't know what the right thing to do is, all we have to do is ask God for wisdom, and He will give it to us. And this area is an area that we must seek God's wisdom in. We must help encourage each other. And we must keep each other accountable. Let me pray that for us now. And then we're going to head out to your small groups for you to discuss this. God, I just thank you for these women. I thank you for their willingness to be here. This book is hard. It hits us in the face and it's convicting. And I just pray again that we would not feel those feelings of guilt and shame, but that we would use those feelings as drivers that turn us towards you. That help turn our children towards you, God, and not to our own doing, not to our own power. God, would you guide us along the way? This area of technology is so pervasive. It's so overwhelming. There's so many dangers that we didn't even touch on today, God. I just pray that you would pour your wisdom out on us in full measure and overflowing, God. Give us the strength and the self-discipline to set limits, to set guardrails around our own hearts, to set guardrails around our families, and then to hold to those, God. God, we love you and we want to pursue you and want to guide our children towards you. Would you just go with us as we go from here today and just hash out what that means in our own lives and in our own homes. We love you in Jesus' name. Amen.